Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
In fact, take a step back from that. Just the notion of a wild card in and of itself, it can be brutal. You win 96 games over the course of the year, and then you're rewarded with what? A win or go home, one game playoff. And if you're the Tampa Bay Rays, you've got to play that game on the road because Oakland won 97 games. Man, that's a really tough proposition. But if you're going to travel from Tampa Bay to the Bay, you may as well make that worth your while. And the Rays did that. Man, did they ever. I present to you, Yandy Diaz, leading off the game in the top of the first.
The 3-1 pitch on its way. Swing and a drive to right field and deep. Back at it is Laureano to the wall. And what a way to start a game! Yandy Diaz goes oppo and he gives the Rays a 1-0 lead right out of the gate.
Rays Radio Network. In Diaz, you've got a guy who had not played but one game since July 22nd. He had played in one game since July 22nd, and he leads off a wild card game with a bomb. Diaz, a surprise starter last night, and then he surprised everybody by jumping ship in that first at bat. Now that's how you silence a rowdy Oakland crowd. Tampa Bay going on the road against an A's team that hit a franchise record 257 home runs. Now think about that for a second. This A's team hit a franchise record for home runs more than when Reggie Jackson was there, more than when the Bash Brothers were mashing and juicing there. But it was Tampa who was crushing the ball last night. Because unlike donuts, if one home run is good, then two is better.
The pitch. Avi drives one to center field. Back at it is Canna. He's just going to turn around and it's off the Holy Toledo side. A two-run home run for Avi Garcia. Rays 3, Oakland nothing here on the second.
That ball from Avi Garcia was crushed to dead center. Like, again, damn. Because that was 115 miles per hour heat coming off that bat. So, if one is good and two is better, how about three?
Now the pitch to him. Swinging another one deep in the air towards right field. Heading back, Laureano turns and looks. How about another homer? Yandy Diaz makes it 4-0 Rays.
Yandy Diaz, jumping ship again. Now, these guys generally are not mashers, but they were mashing last night. And that game went nearly, or that ball went nearly the exact same distance. It went to nearly the exact same spot. The guy who had zero hits in the last 2 months hit two home runs last night. And he's still coming back from injury. Saturday, the same guy was playing in the Instructional League against teenagers. And there he was last night, crushing a 97-win team almost single-handedly. And yes, I'm aware of the fact that Diaz looks like he maybe has seen the inside of a weight room or 50. I could see that he could probably bust out a mean set of hammer curls, followed up by preacher curls, followed up by concentration curls, followed up by spider curls, maybe some cable curls, maybe even an old school barbell curl. Every day is back and by day for him, but it's not just about Diaz and his pipes. There's a ton of power in those home runs, sure, but there's also a lot of skill. You know how hard it is to homer off of major league pitching, even in this home run friendly era? Do you know how tough it is to do that when you've played only one major league game in the last 2 months? You know how tough it is on that big stage to do that when you have not hit a home run since July 18th. It's borderline impossible, yet this guy just shows up and he mashes. But as his teammate, Kevin Kiermaier, said, this is what Diaz does. He said, quote, he's just one of those guys. He just wakes up out of bed and he rakes. Everybody knows him for his muscles and what he can do in the weight room and stuff like that. But the guy finds the barrel so much throughout the whole season. And anytime we're able to have him available, we're happy. End quote. Hell yes, you're happy. Because when you've got a guy like that, with that kind of power in the leadoff spot, in an elimination game, and he's mashing, you are good. And he was finding the barrel in the best way possible last night. Again, a leadoff man who could bench press the entire stadium 25 times. Now, I'd call that winner-take-all game a pressure situation, but Diaz wouldn't because the guy's been through so much worse. He defected from Cuba after failing and getting arrested before. He played winter ball in Venezuela, where he laughed at the pressure. Quote, in Venezuela, if you made an error, maybe you'd get shot. End quote. And again, he was not the only one. The Rays kept on crushing. Tommy Pham in the top of the fifth.
And now the pitch to Pham. Here's a swing and a fly ball. Deep left center field. Canna going back to the wall. It is gone! Tommy Pham with his first postseason home run. And the Rays get the slam lead back. It's 5-1, Tampa Bay.
So the bottom line is, when you're hitting it like that, it doesn't really matter. Even if your ace, your starter, Charlie Morton, did not have his best stuff. He battled, he kept grinding, and his hitters kept hitting. 5-1 when Morton left after 5 and turned it over to the Rays bullpen. And if you have not been paying attention to them, that crew is nasty. In fact, that whole team is nasty. They can pitch, and they showed last night they can play deep ball too. None of those were cheap. They were all shots. Oh, and speaking of shots, you know who else was taking shots? The Tampa Bay Rays Twitter account, at Rays Baseball, came in hot for the Bay Area. When it was over and they had won 5-1, they dropped, quote, just one, baby. And then they chased that with celebration photos in the clubhouse and the caption, hella lit.
Hella lit.
Man, that is so good. Hella lit.
Hella lit.
Just one, baby, and hella lit.
Hella lit.
And now that they've just won, they're going to take that hella lit crew to Houston to face Justin Verlander on Friday and Gerrit Cole on Saturday. So they've got to go up against back-to-back Cy Young favorites and a team that outscored them by 151 runs during the season. On paper, it looks like a beatdown. On paper, that looks like a mismatch. But after seeing what they did last night on the road in a hostile environment, man, count these guys out at your own peril. And if you think they're going to be intimidated, you better think again. Because if Yandy Diaz is in your lineup, better yet, if Yandy Diaz is at the top of your lineup, you're not intimidated by anything. No, I'm not going to take them over Houston. I can't go that far. Because as Sean Casey said yesterday, they're a clubhouse of stone cold killers. But if you expect the Rays just roll over and die, you got the wrong crew. That's not going to happen. Give them some respect. The A's have done it better than everybody for years, under Billy Bean, finding market inefficiencies, thinking outside the box, fighting outside their weight class, and still being competitive despite these disadvantages. But the Rays are now doing it even better. They did to the A's what the A's have been doing to everybody for years. And the Rays get over. Really impressive. And another tough loss for Oakland in an elimination game. 1-800-636-8686. Bob Melvin did not try to hide his frustration. In fact, he owned it.
It's frustrating. It's very sudden. You know, baseball, usually you have a series to kind of, you know, have a tomorrow and come back and win a game. And we've been really good this year about having a tough game and coming back and responding. There's no responding in a game like this.
That's tough. That's tough. 97 wins. They get that wild card game at home. It's all right there. And the Rays come out and they jump them. Tip your hat. Credit the Rays. Really impressive. Charles Robinson is my guest. Charles, what's going on? How are you?
I'm doing well, brother. How are you doing today?
Good, man. Good. Great to have you back. A lot to cover, but let me start right here with the Thursday night matchup. You've got the Rams and the Seahawks. Why don't we start with the Rams? How do you think L.A. shows up after giving up 55 at home to Tampa Bay?
Oh, man. Well, I think this is, to me, probably the classic overcorrection game where the Rams go back, look at how they structure. I don't think they got to Todd Gurley in that loss to Tampa. I think it was like the 14th offensive play before they actually ran the ball. And, I think the Rams know, and particularly when you judge Todd Gurley's demeanor at this point, that he wants more of a workload than he's getting. And I think, you know, that's a game that got out of hand. I think Jared Goff threw, 68 pass attempts. I don't think in any NFL equation, when you throw 68 pass attempts, it's ever a good thing. So I think that you're going to see a Rams team that's going to come out and say, look, we're going to have to run the ball. We've got to balance this out. And maybe this idea of not stacking as many carries on Todd Gurley, maybe we've taken that a little too far at this point. But, you know, look, Seattle, this is not a game to mess around with. I mean, Seattle, to me, if you've looked at, you know, the first quarter of the season, Russell Wilson, Pete Carroll says this is the best Russell Wilson has ever played in his career, which is saying something considering he's probably got fewer weapons now, you know, at his disposal. This, to me, is absolutely a Thursday night measurement game. One of these two teams is going to come out of there, and you're probably going to look at that team, you know, whichever wins, and says that might be the NFC's Super Bowl favorite.
One out of four batteries are going to fail this winter. We know this. So get yours tested for free during Superstar Battery Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts. If yours needs to be replaced, O'Reilly has the Superstar Battery just for you. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices. Every day. Charles Robinson joining us. Charles, what about the Broncos? They're 0-4, and they're heading to face the Chargers on Sunday. How big of a mess is Denver right now?
This is careening out of control. And I think for John Elway, you know, look, there's no power check for John Elway in the Denver Broncos franchise. A lot of that has to do with the lack of, you know, a unified ownership since Pat Bowlen passed away. And, you know, he's now looking at Vic Fangio, staring at 0-4, and he's been through Gary Kubiak. He's been through John Fox, which ended really badly. He's been through, you know, Vance Joseph, which wasn't a good ending. And now he's staring at Vic Fangio, who was supposed to finally be the guy who got it right. And it's 0-4. You've got defensive players who are frustrated. You know, Chris Harris makes the remark leaving the locker room after the last loss. They have only got 13 more weeks. When someone says, I've only got 13 more weeks, they have that like number in their head in late September. That's pretty frightening, you know, for a franchise like the Denver Broncos. And I have to wonder if this continues to spiral out of control, I think you're going to see other NFL teams start knocking on John Elway's door and saying, hey, you got a lot of pieces here that are tradable commodities, Von Miller, you know, Chris Harris, maybe some of these other guys. Are you willing to maybe shed some of these older veteran players? Because if this goes down a hole here, considering you got Joe Flacco at quarterback and, like I said, some aging defensive pieces, Denver might be your next teardown team in the NFL, maybe unexpectedly.
Charles Robinson is joining us. Where does that leave John Elway then, right? Like, if this were any other front office or any other city, he'd be getting so much heat. I mean, right. Is there going to be a time when he gets that kind of scrutiny, or is he virtually bulletproof in that town?
I can't think of the last general manager ever in the NFL who got five coaches. So he's been through four. He's on his fourth coach. I can't think of an NFL general manager who has ever gifted an opportunity to hire a fifth coach. But again, who's there to question John Elway? I think, you know, while the Broncos might protest this, the reality is I think John Elway is the owner of the Broncos. Like, he's in terms of action, in terms of the ability to run the franchise, Joe Ellis there. I guess technically John Elway's boss, but Joe Ellis isn't going to step in front of John Elway. You know, he brought two Super Bowls there as a player. He brought another as a general manager, and now he can't get the quarterback situation settled down for the long term. He has not been able to find the right head coach until there's someone in that organization who takes the controls and ownership and turns around and says to John, you're on the clock. I think he can continue to make the mistakes that he's going to make. The only thing that could change it is fans not showing up. I think if you saw a dramatic curtail in terms of ticket buying, maybe that's what moves the needle there. But I don't think John's going anywhere. He's going to continue to be allowed to make mistakes.
Charles Robinson, my guest. You know, that point about the quarterback is really something. You got one of the greatest quarterbacks ever who can't find a quarterback. You had a conversation with then Broncos coach Vance Joseph, and he made the point that if you don't have a quarterback, it's hard to do anything. And not just because you don't have a quarterback, but because the players know you don't have a quarterback. What was your takeaway from the conversation? And then how much does that impact the locker room when you don't have a quarterback and everybody knows it?
Yeah, I think it was interesting. That was a conversation I had with Vance last year, and you know, he admitted, you know, what they had brought in Case Keenum, they were feeling pretty good about it. And Vance said, look, when you have a quarterback in here and there are guys looking at the situation saying, let's be realistic here, that's not a guy we're going to win a Super Bowl with, or that's not the sort of the long-term answer, that's not the guy we're building around. He said players aren't dummies. Like, they know what the situation is, and they know that they're entering into a season where it's going to be difficult to achieve this goal you're setting for them. And he says, look, even us as coaches, we kind of know that. And I thought it was a pretty interesting, you know, thing for Vance Joseph to admit. And then Case Keenum didn't work out, and Vance Joseph ends up losing his job. Well, here you are with Joe Flacco. And again, what was interesting to me is when I went through there in training camp, I already had people who I had dinner with a Broncos staffer, and he admitted to me, he said, look, Joe is what he is. Like, he's not going to be a huge up arrow guy. We're not going to, you know, set the world on fire offensively. Well, guess what? You have all these defensive players practicing against Joe Flacco, knowing, hey, this isn't the future here. What are we doing? That's the question that gets asked. And it only gets louder when you fall into an 0-4 hole. And I think right now, Von Miller, Chris Harris, a number of these guys are sitting there going, what are we doing? What's the future of this franchise? And hey, look at my career. I'm on the clock right now. I only have a few years left.
Charles Robinson joining us. That's not a good place to be. Now, what about Jacksonville? Jacksonville knows that Jalen Ramsey does not want to be there. The owner just said, we're not going to move him. Where do things stand with him right now? And do you think he's going to finish the year in Jacksonville or someplace else?
Is he ever going to practice at this point in
that
Jacksonville?
That too.
Another, once again, the back injury that you know, is keeping him out of practice. You know, there's a whole lot of subtext there. Here's a guy who's asked repeatedly now for a trade, said publicly, I still want to be traded. And then, you know, has now missed practice due to first an illness, then this back tightness, then the birth of a second child. Now the back is coming into play again. And I think this is coming to a head, because at some point the coaching staff, Doug Marrone, Tom Coughlin, obviously in the front office there, someone's going to sit down with Jalen Ramsey and they're going to say, look, we believe you're healthy. And at some point this becomes conduct detrimental to the team, where you're holding yourself out, you know, of practice without any kind of a medical situation that we can prove, you know, that you should be on the field. At some point, you're going to have these two sides. Something's going to break here. And Shad Khan, the owner, has to come to grips with, he may not want to trade Jalen Ramsey, but Jalen Ramsey has come out and said, I don't want to sign an extension here. I don't want to be here. I want to go somewhere else. And Shad Khan clearly does not want to trade him, because I've talked to a number of teams that spoke with the Jaguars. They said, hey, we thought there was an opportunity to get him. Even for the two first-round picks they were asking for, there was some kind of an infrastructure for a trade here. But now Shad Khan's put the, you know, squashed all of that completely. I still believe that when the trade deadline comes around, if we are where we are now, Jalen Ramsey's not practicing, you know, causing problems and frustrating the coaching staff, Shad Khan's going to have to, you know, move this guy at some point.
Charles Robinson breaking down the NFL with us once again. Charles, what do you make? I'm moving through this pretty quickly, but what do you make and what do you think Khalil Mack is going to do on Sunday? How do you think he shows up against the Raiders, and how ugly could that get?
There's no player in the world who wants to crush John Gruden more than Khalil Mack. Like, he could talk about the trade and it was a business decision and, hey, I thought I'd finish my career as a Raider and all these things. But I think it hurt, you know, Khalil Mack when he was dealt to the Chicago Bears. I think he felt like, you know, especially when John Gruden came out and said some of these things about, you know, hey, we don't think we can pay a player the kind of money that Chicago was willing to pay him. You know, there's certain things that we look at in terms of like foundational cornerstones, and clearly Khalil Mack didn't fit into that. First off, Derek Carr, not the most mobile guy on the face of the earth. I mean, you know, he's okay athletically. He's a pretty good athlete as a quarterback. But Khalil Mack's going to get to him. And I think this is one of those games where, even though, you know, he's got a friendship with certain guys that remain on the Raiders, he's dialing it up. And I would not be surprised if this is one of those games where we see Khalil Mack just explode. 3-4 sacks, absolute, you know, prove it kind of a game for him. And I would expect him after this kind of a game, if he can achieve that, he's going to chirp a little bit about John Gruden.
Oh, no. I think that Khalil Mack likes Carr. I think they're friends. But I think he hates Gruden way more than he likes Carr. And he's going to get there and he's going to make his point. I agree. Listen, let me ask you about, before you go, Mitchell Trubisky. Like, Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes, of course, were famously available when the Bears selected Trubisky. But you've made the point that Trubisky has already moved into the class of Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota. What do you mean by that?
Well, you're sitting here and you took this guy, obviously number one overall, and I think, you know, for the problem that the Bears have is that you have a quarterback who, in terms of the timeline of development, you're sitting there saying, man, when do we sign a contract extension with this guy? That's not even on it. We have to figure out whether we even keep this guy. So Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota were guys that obviously the teams kicked in their fifth-year option, wanted to see the full five-year window before committing to these guys. And the Bears are already there on Mitchell Trubisky. You're basically right in the middle of that five-year continuum, and they're already saying, man, we clearly missed a couple of franchise quarterbacks for sure. We don't know whether or not this guy is a franchise quarterback or even worthy of offering him a long-term deal. That's really troubling for the Chicago Bears. There's clearly some physical limitations there for Mitchell Trubisky, or at least some developmental limitations in terms of the passing game. Not a great place to be. Ask anyone in Tennessee and Tampa, and they'll tell you how frightening it is to consider ponying up a long-term deal for either Marcus Mariota or Jameis Winston.
Listen, one last thought. What about Deshaun Watson, who I think the guy's still a really special player, but how worried would you be if you're a Texans fan if you've seen the team try as hard as it has to improve that offensive line and Watson is still second in the league in sacks and fifth in hits?
Yeah, I've made the statement a couple of times. I think that you're going to break him. At some point, you're going to break this guy. Like, he cannot continue to pile up the number of hits that he's taking, the number of sacks that he's taking. It almost, you know, reminds you going back far enough when you go back and look at David Carr when he was the quarterback of the Texans and, you know, was the number one overall pick and just got absolutely slaughtered over the first 4 years of his career in terms of the number of hits and sacks that he took. And at some point with Deshaun Watson, you're going to see injuries come into play, whether it's concussions, whether it's, you know, God forbid, shoulder or knee injuries. Once those start to happen, you're changing the long-term future of your franchise. And I can't imagine, I don't know how much more they can invest into this offensive line before at some point someone looks at Bill O'Brien and says, we got to find a general manager or at least someone in terms of talent procurement who can fix this position. We have not been able to do it, and we do not want to destroy what should be a stellar 10-year career for this kid.
That's how you do it. Senior NFL reporter for Yahoo. He's the co-host of the Yahoo Sports NFL podcast. Good friend of the program. Can't put him on enough. Charles Robinson. Charles, great to have you, man. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. Always my pleasure, Jim.
You know what can be really hard? Hiring. Such a slow process. As an example, Cafe Altura's COO, Dylan Miskowitz, needed to hire a director of coffee for his organic coffee company, but was having all sorts of trouble finding qualified applicants. Then he switched to ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter does not depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. You see, its technology identifies people with the right experience and then actively invites them to apply to your job so you get qualified candidates quickly. Back to Dylan. He posted the job on ZipRecruiter and said that he was impressed by how quickly he had amazing candidates apply. He also used ZipRecruiter's candidate rating feature to filter the applicants so he could focus on the most relevant ones. And that's exactly how my man Dylan found his new director of coffee, and he did so in only a few days. With results like that, it is no wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the very first day. See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes. Try ZipRecruiter for free at this web address, ZipRecruiter.com/clones. 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 ZipRecruiter is the smartest way to hire. A good enough story that Showtime has done a documentary on his underdog journey to the NFL this past summer. And the doc is called 100%. And it's 73 minutes in running time. Now, I bring up the name of the doc and the running time because I'm going to say at least 6% of 100% was left on the cutting room floor. And this is not unusual. It happens all the time in the content business, every single day. You always produce more than you can use because you find other uses for those that don't make the actual doc or the actual thing or the actual show. And sometimes, if the surplus content is good enough, it gets released elsewhere, like on an extended cut DVD, or maybe on a social media exclusive, or maybe it's repurposed or repackaged into a podcast. Whatever and wherever it makes sense, they'll find a way to use it. So yesterday, Julian Edelman parked some of that leftover documentary content on YouTube in a 5-minute clip. And Julian's pretty good at this sort of thing. He ominously titles it Bizarre First Conversation with Coach Belichick. Now, right now, we live in a time where storytelling is the most compelling kind of content there is. If you look at any pitch or any treatment or any development, it's always about storytelling. Always. And the truth is often stranger than fiction and a whole hell of a lot more interesting because what you're seeing or hearing actually did happen, you know, allegedly. But the problem with the truth, if there is a problem with the truth, is sometimes we aren't ready for it. Sometimes the truth is better left unsaid. Sometimes, as Colonel Jessup famously said,
you can't handle the truth.
Sometimes we can't. So, this deleted scene from Edelman is, in fact, hard to handle. No doubt. And it might put some images into your head that you would rather not see. You know, even if you don't see them, you can imagine them or conjure them up. And even if you can't see them, you can't unsee them. You know what I'm saying? So keep that in mind. If you're not sure whether or not you can handle the truth, then maybe you just step away for a moment or two. Because the reigning Super Bowl MVP drops a very revealing story on the least revealing coach of all time. And if he does something like that, I'm pretty much under obligation to talk about it. So why don't we take it from the very top? Let's roll this thing in separate pieces.
I've been there for 10 years. I've talked to him 8 times. I think he's secretly funny, and I feel like I've gotten to the point where I can actually laugh at his jokes. We don't give examples, okay? What happens in that building stays in that building.
All right, a few things here. Did he start off by saying that he's been there 10 years and has spoken to Bill Belichick 8 times? 8 times in 10 years. Did I hear that right?
I've been there for 10 years. I've talked to him 8 times.
All right, so let me do the math. That's less than one conversation per year. Julian is averaging 4/5 of a conversation with the hoodie every 12 months. I don't know if that's the weirdest thing ever or the best thing ever. I mean, he is a really important player. He's been really critical of their dynasty, and he's averaging less than a conversation a year. But he did say in the first 14 seconds of a 5-minute deleted scene that what happens in the building stays in the building. I mean, he did say that, right?
What happens in that building stays in that building.
What happens in that building stays in that building. So let me tell you about something that happened in the building, right? Pretty odd thing to say. Right before a 5-minute story about something that happened in the building. And what happened in the building, according to Edelman, was an all-time awkward game of after-hours cat and mouse. Because sometime between Edelman's 3rd and 4th season, he was at the facility around 11 o'clock one night, and he was not alone.
I liked hanging out at the facility. I'd use the cold tubs until like 10, 11 o'clock at night. I was in there, and I go in the weight room, and it's all pitch black. And I look, and there's Bill. He's got the film on. Got the big old book out, full pencil in the ear, writing notes, watching film on treadmill, 11 o'clock at night, no one's there. And so I hurry and scatter out of there so he doesn't by any chance see me. That's the last thing I would want at that time in my life and career, because then I'd have to engage in a potential conversation, and I don't know if I had the stamina for that at the time.
I think we can all relate. Every single one of us knows exactly what he's talking about. We've all been there. We've all seen someone somewhere we desperately did not want to see because we did not want to have that conversation. All of us. So that's like the most relatable thing ever. Side note, how about the hood? Crushing game tape at 11 o'clock at night while busting it on the treadmill all alone in the weight room. At least the guy's getting in some exercise while he engages in the most unhealthy occupation in American sports. Now back to Edelman, because dude had a decision to make. Do I duck out and avoid Belichick and risk having him see me duck out? Or do I risk having that conversation with him? Do I finish the workout with a quick session in the hot tub? What do I do? All these options. He obviously chose to get into the hot tub, and it was not the right choice.
I just so happened to walk by the hot tub. Coach is in the hot tub. Obviously, I came in the room to go in the hot tub. But then we made eye contact, and my natural instinct was to, like, turn around and, like I was going to leave. But then I saw that he saw that I was in there, And then he got up and got out. And real big party foul by a coach. I mean, we're supposed to have shorts on. But I guess at 11 o'clock when you're the goat of coaching, you go wherever you want. Free ball. So I had to hide my absolute face of terror after seeing what I saw and sit in the hot tub. So I sit in the hot tub. I'm already extremely uncomfortable. I didn't know that people went in hot tubs without swim trunks.
So tell me again why this deleted scene did not just stay deleted. Bill, Larry Brown, Belichick, Julian, Toby, Edelman. Too bad for Edelman that the hot tub was not a time machine.
Hot tub time machine.
Because I'm sure that guy would love to go back in time and just leave the facility after seeing Hood on the treadmill instead of sticking around and catching a full frontal of Hood's banana and grapes. Hell, I would love for Edelman to go back in time because then I never would have heard that story. Let's remind everybody once again that Edelman started by saying this.
What happens in that building stays in that building.
What a tragic mislead. You also heard him say that he was terrified after seeing the Hood's package. But the story's not over. Because after seeing him on the treadmill and then seeing all of him in the hot tub, Edelman ran into the Hood a third time on his way out of the building.
I had to like trail him by like a foot. No less, no more. We didn't say a word. I'm just walking and I'm talking probably like a 30-yard walk. I don't know where I got the confidence, but I asked him, Coach, I mean, it's pretty amazing that you're here this late. And he looked back at me and without any hesitation goes, it beats being a plumber. See you tomorrow. I was mind bleeped.
Yeah, you and me both, Jules. I mean, that's some nightmare fuel right there. Legitimate nightmare fuel. Trapped in a building with your boss, unable to get out, and running into him over and over again in the most awkward situations. Getting a very unfortunate and traumatizing view of his junk, and then running into him again on the way out. You gotta love that one of the 8 conversations that he's had in 10 years with Belichick was Belichick telling him that grinding tape and nude hot tubbing beats being a plumber.
It beats being a plumber. See you tomorrow.
I like how he kind of mimicked him too. Beats being a plumber. We're on to Cincinnati.
It beats being a plumber.
It beats being a plumber, and it sure as hell beats being a construction guy too. Ain't that right, Jules? See you on Snapface.
It beats being a plumber.
Hey, you're not snap facing this, are you, Jules? You didn't instant chat my junk, did you, Jules?
It beats being a plumber.
Hey, listen, no disrespect to plumbers, but I'd rather be a plumber than Julian Edelman that night. And I'd rather that entire scene stay deleted. Man, it's been a banner year for nudity already. Kyle Long naked in the background of Tariq Cohn's Instagram Live. Gardner Minshew earning the gloss jockstrap king for his naked pregame stretching. And now the hoodie going all Larry Brown with it on Toby Edelman, allegedly. Again, just delete the scene. Next time, permanently.
It beats being a plumber.
There's a reason why that was on the cutting room floor. It should have stayed there. It should have been on the cutting room garbage can. Julian Edelman just pushing the envelope, telling stories about the Hood in a hot tub with no trunks on. Beats being a plumber, eh, Jules?
It beats being a plumber.
Hey, Jules, it beats being a plumber, which is what you're going to be if this story ever sees the light of day. Let me tell you something, man. You don't want to see the football ever again? You best not ever share the details of this. And you'll find out what it's like to be a plumber, Edelman.
It beats being a plumber.
Also, a friend of the program, Pat Forty, is my guest. Pat, it's been a little bit. Good to have you back. How are you?
Hey, Jim, good to be with you. Doing fine, thank you.
Good to have you. So, Pat, it's been a couple of days since California Governor Gavin Newsom signed the Fair Pay to Play Act. And as you pointed out, the power brokers in college sports are working really hard to tell everybody how much damage it's going to do to college athletics. What do you make of their arguments?
I think it's a bunch of scare tactics. It's a bunch of, false hysteria, basically, because they have been resistant all along to any change to the status quo. You know, this is something really has been coming for a decade, ever since Ed O'Bannon filed his suit in 2009. College sports leadership has done nothing to get in front of it, nothing to meet the players or the athletes halfway. They've just said, no, our way's the only way, and again, grab for more cash. So this latest response doesn't really surprise me, but I think it's disingenuous, and I think it's creating this hysteria that, oh, we're going to have to cut Olympic sports. We're going to cut women's sports. That's not going to be the case. If it is the case, shame on them for bad fiscal management of their athletic departments.
We're talking to Pat Forte. Now, Pat, before we get into some of the sports that are not basketball and football, how much do you think college basketball and college football will be negatively impacted by this legislation?
I don't think it'll be bad. I really don't. You know, I mean, I think that, first of all, some players who likely, you know, are due some money will get some money. Some players who are big deals. Tua Tagovailoa, you know, will be able to, if he were still around in 2023, would be able to go sign autographs for $5,000, would be able to do a commercial for a Ford dealership in Tuscaloosa for $10,000, something like that. You know, players that are helping fill the stadiums will see some of the benefits from that. I don't think it's going to tear apart the fabric of a team. I don't think it's going to overly professionalize the endeavor. And I think fans will adjust just fine. And I don't think it's going to change where the players go necessarily either. I mean, for the most part, the good players already go to those places. I don't think that's going to, you know, be altered dramatically, the balance of power. It's not going to be – we don't have the greatest parity anyway right now, college football especially. I don't think it changes for the worse.
We're talking to Pat Forte. So, Pat, one more thought about this. You've got a piece up right now on Regan Smith and what this bill could mean to somebody like her. For those who do not know, who is she and how special is she at what she does?
Yeah, she's a 17-year-old swimmer from Minnesota, and she's the fastest backstroker in the history of the planet for females. All right, she broke the world records in July in Korea. I was there, saw it happen. It was incredible. She will be a very prominent face going into the Olympics this next summer. And she is still in high school. She's going to graduate in the fall. She's going to go to Stanford. She earned, based on her performance in Korea, she earned $140,000 in world championship bonuses, in money USA Swimming wants to give her, other proceeds. But the NCAA won't let her have most of that money. She was able to get $41,000. There's still $100,000 she can't get. And she's not alone. There's plenty of other college athletes, swimmers, wrestlers, gymnasts, whatever, that are due money from their national governing bodies, and NCAA rules prohibits them from getting it. My daughter's one of them. She's a swimmer at Stanford herself, and you know, there's about $22,000 she's had to leave on the table because of NCAA rules.
How's that make you feel, Pat?
Not too happy, Jim.
Right. Pat Forte, my guest, without question. All right, Pat, so I appreciate your thoughts on that. Shifting to on-the-field topics and college football, Ohio State has Michigan State and Columbus on Saturday. Five games, Pat, into Ryan Day's tenure as head coach. What do you make of how he's handled that job?
Whoa, fantastic. He has been on fire. His team has been on fire. You know, I think that, obviously, he has a great mind for the game. We knew that. The question was, could he lead a team, manage a program? So far, all results, complete slam dunks. They have been great. You know, the word that I have heard out of Columbus is it's just a lighter atmosphere, that Urban was such a serious, intense guy that, you know, as some people said, that it was like every day was fourth and one. And now that's gone a little bit. You know, it's not to say Urban was bad at his job, but he just made it, I think, a little bit more stressful environment, and Ryan Day has managed to diffuse that while maintaining all of the on-field success.
Pat Forte joining us. So the Buckeyes smashed Nebraska last weekend, and they have not really been tested so far this year. Pat, Michigan State more of a challenge. Will they be more of a challenge, or are they also not in that same class?
Well, they'll definitely be more of a challenge, but, you know, I'm still not sure they're in a class where they can legitimately threaten to beat Ohio State. They're just offensively up and down, you know, very inconsistent, not enough playmakers. Defensively, they're great, and that'll be the big test, is that can that defense slow down Justin Fields and the great receivers and J.K. Dobbins and at least keep it close enough to apply some pressure on Ohio State. They have knocked everyone out by halftime so far. I mean, it's been a Mike Tyson run. Nobody has stood in the ring with them long enough to make them doubt themselves even a little bit. We'll see if Michigan State can at least do that.
We are talking to Pat Forte. All right, Pat, staying in the Big Ten for a minute. Number 14, Iowa, is at number 19, Michigan. Saturday, the Wolverines are favored at home. How big of a game is that for Michigan and Jim Harbaugh?
Huge, huge. This whole month, I called it Harbaugh Credibility Month because that's already been damaged, obviously, with the huge loss to Wisconsin. But they've got Iowa, they've got Penn State, they've got Notre Dame all this month. Two of the three at home, one on the road. If he's worse than 2-1, I think people really begin to give up on any idea that he can get them to a championship level. So home game against the Hawkeyes, they're favored. I'm a little surprised. I think the spread's about 5. I haven't seen enough out of Michigan to like them to think they can win this game. They may have the talent to do it, but they just haven't put it together. And so there's, I think, a lot of pressure on them to show something this week.
Pat, why do you think they haven't? Why do you think things have not worked out the way that Michigan expected when Harbaugh first arrived?
I just think lack of offensive identity. You know, from year to year, they don't know what they're good at. They don't know what they want to be. They started off as a power pro team, and they've tried to evolve into more of a spread team, and it really just hasn't worked. And they're on a different offensive coordinator now, Josh Gattis, who's never been a coordinator before. And I think the learning curve's been a bit slow. The quarterback play has not been very good year in and year out. And the defense has been pretty good, but the offense just hasn't been up to that level where you can compete with the Ohio States of the world.
Covering a lot of ground, Pat Forte. We've got a few more minutes with him. Pat, so you look at Oklahoma. Let me jump there for a minute. Jalen Hurts is just tearing it up. Through 4 games, he's on pace to set a number of FBS records. How much of that is about Hurts, and how much of that is about Lincoln Riley?
Boy, you know, I give credit to both of them. I mean, Lincoln has made Jalen Hurts look like a far better quarterback than he ever did at Alabama. You know, and that scheme, that's putting confidence into him, both of those things. But you also got to give credit to Hurts for really believing in himself. I think it shook him to his core to lose the job at Alabama and to sit there and watch Tua last year. But he said, you know what, I'm good enough. I'll go and I'll prove it. And he is. I mean, he's just playing phenomenal football right now. So I give credit to both of them. It's a heck of a story. And we'll see how far Jalen Hurts can take this.
Pat, what about Trevor Lawrence, who was unreal last season? He's come back to earth this season. What has been the biggest difference in your mind between last year and this year for him?
Yeah, you know, just not quite as accurate. Has missed some big plays that he was making at the end of last year. And just kind of expected this automatic carryover with all the weapons back that they're just going to light it up the way they lit up Alabama and the way they lit up Notre Dame. And it just hadn't been there so far yet. The offensive line in front of him is not as good. So that's kind of, you know, put him in a little bit more uncomfortable positions. He's had a little more pass rush on him, and that'll affect any quarterback. So, you know, he's probably just got to get a little better protection, a little more settled in the pocket, and he's probably going to go back to lighting up defenses. You know, the fact is, they're still undefeated with him playing far below expectations to this point.
Pat Forte, my guest. Before I let you go, Pat, Ohio State, are they the most impressive team so far, or does that honor go to Auburn?
You know, eye test, it goes to Ohio State. Resume, it goes to Auburn because they've got great wins. They've beaten 3 teams that, if you look at like the Sagarin ratings, are all better than the best team Ohio State has beaten. You go on a neutral field, you beat Oregon. You go on the road, you beat Texas A&M. You pound Mississippi State. That's a really impressive run. If they add Florida's skin to the wall this weekend in Gainesville, I think they're an absolute no doubt number one. We'll see if the polls ever get around to agreeing with me. I think right now they're number 7, which is way too low in my opinion.
So we talk swimming, we talk football, and on the way out the door, I got to hit you up on baseball because you're a legendary St. Louis Cardinals fan. How are you feeling about the team going into the NLDS against the Braves?
Whew, you know, staggered out of the regular season, but they've got a chance. You know, you start over, you go from scratch, get a few days rest for that ragged bullpen. We'll take our chances starting at 5 o'clock today.
Are you craving some protein after a really good workout? Don't make a shake. Do not eat a bar. Instead, grab a bag of beef jerky from Old Trapper. Best thing I've ever done. Wild Trapper? Because Old Trapper beef jerky is tasty and it's tender, and it's made with real strips of steak and quality spices that are smoked over a wood fire. Old Trapper is a family-owned business that takes smoked beef extremely seriously, and you can taste it in every single bite. I mean, who wants dried, tough beef in a bag? Nobody. It's like eating a shoe. Old Trapper is the real deal. It comes in four amazing flavors. Old Fashioned, it's sweetened with a touch of brown sugar goodness. You've got teriyaki, peppered, and hot and spicy for those of you who like to take things up a notch. So next time you want a great protein and energy snack, you can have anytime, anywhere, grab some Old Trapper beef jerky. Look for the Old Trapper in the Clearview bag. You can see the quality that you're buying. Look for it in major retail stores near you. Clones, if you don't see it, be sure you ask for it by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef? For a lot of people, New York is just a team that's got a loaded lineup that just steamrolls their way into the postseason, and they're on autopilot. A lot of people see it that way, but people who don't understand baseball, or people who are not taking the time to look at it, or people who just do not want to give them credit because of who they are. I mean, sure, they've got a lot of talent. They've got a lot of talent, but they've had a ton of injuries. A record 39 trips to the injured list this year, and yet they still won 103 games. They still won that division by 7 games. I mean, yes, some of that's a testament to their depth. Some of that is a testament to the moves that Brian Cashman's made. But a lot of that is how Aaron Boone handles that clubhouse and how he runs that thing. I mean, there seems to be this perception that he's just a guy, just a nice guy, just a guy with a famous last name who is a pretty good player, just a guy who shows up and writes down a bunch of names on a lineup card and then waits for further instruction from the front office. Yeah, I'm not so sure that's all there is to it. I'm not so sure it's that easy. I'm not so sure you win 100 games in your first season as an MLB manager, and then you win 103 in your second season, and you do it on that stage in that town. And it's as easy as just showing up and filling up a lineup card. I'm thinking if you can do those things, you must be doing something right. And if you can do those things in the most pressure-packed job in all of baseball, then it might be a sign that you know what you're doing. It might be a sign that you've got a way of connecting with the players. It might be a sign that you're really good at the job, even though you've never done the job. I guess what I'm saying is, can you give the guy some bleeping credit? I mean, for real.
Give them some credit. I mean, for real.
And he finally got some. He got some credit in the form of the ESPN treatment from Jeff Passan. Now, check that. The Jeff Passan treatment. He got the Passan treatment. And you know, if Passan is going to spend some time and do a profile on you, some good stuff is going to emerge. And it did. Like the fact that Boone's nightly ritual is to get home, rewatch the game that he just managed, and then watch Friends on Netflix to help him fall asleep. Or the fact that he can't even get respect in his own household. When a friend asked Boone's son, Brandon, what he thought about the old man interviewing with the Yankees, Brandon did not think that was a good idea. Brandon said, quote, horrible idea. My dad has coached 1 year of flag football. The Yankees? He'll be gone within a year. End quote. That's your own son pointing at your record as a head coach of a flag football team and saying that you interviewing for the most prestigious managerial job in baseball is, quote, a horrible idea. You're getting that from your own kid. Well, and then you're going to get canned after 1 year as manager. Brandon Boone going all sports radio caller on Aaron Boone. Pretty wild. Almost as wild as the revelation that Boone had to work really, really hard to eliminate cursing from his vocabulary before he became a manager. Like he busted his ass. Busted his rump to eliminate cursing. But then he got that job. And, well, he couldn't stop. He started again. He quit cursing, took that job, and then gave the world this amazing rant.
My guys are savages.
I'd give anything for that audio to be cleaned up. I'd give anything for that audio to be better. It is so good. The best part of that rant wasn't the bleeping savages line, where my guys are bleeping savages. It was him telling the young ump to get his act together. He said, quote, "You're having a piece of bleep start to this game. I feel bad for you, but bleeping get better." It's an amazing thing to say to an umpire. You're having a bleeping bad start. You're having a piece of bleep start to this game. I feel bad for you, but bleeping get better. Man, that is perfect. That is so glorious and something everybody should take to heart. I don't care how you started things out at work or in school or whatever it is you're doing today. Bleeping get better. I said it then, I'll say it again right now. Calling something or someone, quote, a savage is like the least cool thing you could ever do. It's the most tired thing ever. It's the Toledo broadcaster way of trying to sound cool and trying to sound hip. But Boone did the impossible. He managed to actually inject a little life into that tired, played out term. And that became part of his Yankees team's identity. No wonder they reportedly have new nameplates on their lockers, which read 2019 Division Series October Savages. In other words, more than 2 months later, his guys are still fired up by that rant. In a world where news stories vanish in seconds, nothing lasts more than a day or so, that tells you something. It says something. Now, just because Boone's done a great job in the regular season does not guarantee them a trip to the World Series. Doesn't even guarantee them a trip out of the ALDS. Their starting pitching is a mess. They're facing a Twins team that can absolutely bomb. And if they get past Minnesota, then they have to deal with Houston. Boone knows this. And he knows that if he doesn't get it done, then none of it will matter. None of the regular season, doesn't matter how many games they won, how many injuries they had, none of it will matter. None of that will be remembered. Nobody will care about 39 injuries. Nobody will care that he cobbled together lineups of minor leaguers and castoffs and brilliantly won 103 games. All they'll remember is he didn't win a World Series. And they probably will blame him if they don't win number 28. But he knows that. He knows he signed up for that. But to me, and the point of this take, it doesn't mean the guy does not deserve credit for what he's done, because he does. So give it to him. I mean, for real.
You give them some credit. I mean, for real.
Regardless of what happens against the Twins, regardless of if they advance and get to the ALCS and come up short, man, give this guy credit. What a great hire. What a great manager. Aaron freaking Boone if you need him. And I love that Friends is still a big hit inside their clubhouse, or at least inside his house. I wonder if his favorite character is Joey. You know, like Luis Severino.
I also watch a lot of movies, man. I love watching Friends, so I think I learned a lot of English from watching Friends, and that kept me going.
Oh, that's awesome. So who's your favorite character on Friends?
Joey.
That's awesome. I love that, as you can tell. He said he learned to speak English to a large extent by watching Friends. And Joey's his favorite character. I mean, if I had to pick a favorite character, my favorite character was Geller. Notice that is not Geller, but was Geller. It was Geller until Ross valued picking up trash and cleaning bathrooms at the city parks of Alhambra more than he did working on this show. I was always a big Geller fan until that happened. We're in it, right? We are in the football season. Do you like to get down? Are you betting on football? If so, you want to get to MyBookie, and you want to get there right now because it's fast, it's easy, and at MyBookie, they pay you when you win. Let's face it, where you're betting is just as important as who you're betting on. And I would not tell you to go there if they were not the best. Do the smart thing. If you're going to bet on football this season, bet with MyBookie. So many good reasons to do so. For instance, in the second half, if your bet is going to lose and you know it, you can jump to the other side. I bet in games myself. I love it. Or if you're the kind of guy that wants to bet a little and try to win a lot, go with the parlay, of course. If all your picks come through, you'll multiply your winnings And no matter how you bet, the NFL season is the very best time of year. We all know that. So join right now, and MyBookie will double your first deposit. Use the promo code ROME and activate immediately. Promo code ROME. Visit MyBookie.ag today. MyBookie.ag. You play, you win, you get paid. Josh Lambeau is my guest. Josh, great to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thanks. About yourself?
Good. Really good. Good to have you. So take me back to Sunday in Denver. Just under 3 minutes to go. You kick a field goal to extend the team's lead to 23-17. And then Denver scores the TD to take a one-point lead with about a minute and a half to go. You said after the game your reaction to the touchdown was, quote, sweet, looks like I got a game-winning kick in front of me, end quote. So I like that. At that point, knowing the confidence you have in your offense, what was going through your mind when you saw the offense go to work?
I was just excited that they kept on getting me closer. So I gave our special teams coach my, hey, I'm good from, you know, the low 60s. If we need a 63-yarder, then, you know, I'll be able to at least get it there. I don't know if I'll make it, but I'll get it there. The wind was difficult to contend with, and so I just complimented all the wide receivers that just kind of tiptoed that line, got an extra few yards. Just thanking them for making that kick a lot easier than it could have been.
I was going to ask you about the wind because it was a 33-yard field goal attempt, but it was into 22-mile-per-hour winds. So when you go on the field, are you visualizing the kick, or maybe are you trying to empty your head of all thoughts? What's your process?
Yeah, so at the moment of the kick, I'm trying to be pretty I'm not trying to think about much other than my technique. I do go out before my warm-up, though, and I'll do like a visualization set before every game. So as soon as I get to the stadium, you know, 3.5-4 hours early, get changed, go out in the field, and I'll probably do maybe 6 to 10 just dry swing field goals going each direction. Same thing with kickoff, just to kind of get that visualization. I feel like if you can see it in your mind, you can do it with your body.
Josh Lambeau, right. I'm sorry, go ahead.
But then when I get out there for the kick, I just try to go blank and rely on my muscle memory, my technique.
We're talking to Josh Lambeau. You know, you're not going to take all the credit for the win, of course, but when you kick the field goal that wins the game on the road, how do you describe what that feels like exactly? What is that like?
It's just sheer elation, you know, get to kind of celebrate with your buddies and with your teammates and, you know, makes that trip home, that plane ride a heck of a lot more enjoyable.
What's it like when you don't make that kick and you got to get on that same plane? Are guys picking you up, or do they leave you to yourself? What's that like?
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, I did have one, you know, pretty noticeable miss that gave the Browns their only win in 2 years in Cleveland on Christmas Eve when I was with the Chargers, and I missed that last second kick, and we lost, and that was a pretty lonely lonely place to be. But in terms of, you know, what the guys are doing, honestly, it just depends. Player to player, it changes. You know, some guys might mother F you, some guys might say, hey man, you're good, some guys might say, hey, it's just a game, let's get your head right and get ready for next week. I would prefer everyone to just kind of stay away from me. You know, I'm not going up to a guard, hey man, it's okay, you let up that sack, don't worry about it, and so I just don't want guys doing that to me. But, you know, we have a really good locker room, really good group of guys, and so I trust everybody in this locker room.
Josh, that is such an awesome answer. I really respect that. I mean, will guys really MF you? I mean, it's one thing to think it, right? Will somebody actually come up to you and say that?
It certainly has happened in the past.
What's your response to something like that?
You can't have a response. I mean, something occurred like that my rookie year. I mean, I'm a new guy. This dude was a veteran, and it's just like, yes, sir, I'll do better next time.
Josh Lambeau joining us. I know without being there, I know a guy who would never, ever, ever do that, because this guy is almost always one of the first guys to get to you when you make a kick, and that's Calais Campbell. And Josh, yeah. This is a huge Calais Campbell house. I cannot tell you how much I respect this guy and how much I like him. You've called him maybe the best leader you've ever been around. I can tell you get fired up talking about him. What makes him so special, and what's it like to have that kind of relationship with him?
You know, he just kind of has this charisma about him that he just draws you in. You know, you just his physical presence, his voice, the things that he says, it just kind of attracts people to him. He's a wonderful person. He actually like cares about his teammates. He wants to get to know you. You know, he wants to lift you up and encourage you. There was one point in the off season, I was recovering from a hernia surgery, and I just didn't have a lot in the tank that day. I'm here in the stadium doing rehab. Calais is up here working out. And I was like, Calais, man, I just don't got a lot today. He's like, hey, that's okay, man. But whatever you got, if you only have the 20%, you give all that 20%, and you give everything you got. Whatever you can give, whatever's available, you give it back. And I'm like, you know what, man? That's why you're our captain. You know, that's why he's the leader of this team, because he can just motivate you. And he did. I had a great rest of my workout that day. You know, and I was actually able to regurgitate that conversation back to him during I think the Thursday night game against Tennessee, and he's like, you know what, man? Good, I got you, I got you. And he went out there and made a big play. He and I just have a really cool, special, unique relationship, and I mean, he's one of the few people, when football ends, he's somebody I'm going to stay in touch with.
Jags kicker Josh Lambeau joining us. I understand that. To your point that he kind of makes you feel like you're the most important guy in the room. When I saw him last in the CBS studios in New York, I've had him on the show so many times, but I think that'd be the first time I'd seen him. Same thing, you know, a really brief encounter, but he makes you feel like you're the only guy in the room. It's really unique. Not many people can do that. You've made the point that a lot of kickers would probably rather be seen and not heard, but you're looking to bring your own juice, your own sauce. Where does that attitude and approach come from?
Yeah, I think that just comes from me being a part of this organization. You know, I think that was a big part of our success in 2017 is we had this swagger about us, and you know, I feel like last year it wasn't really there. And I'm not saying it wasn't here the first couple of games, but I felt like we weren't where we needed to be to get the results that we wanted. So I was trying to hype guys up in the locker room. You know, trying to get guys going on the sidelines. I'm even maybe going up to other guys that have more influence on the team. I say, hey, man, we got to pick it up a little bit. It's a little too quiet. We need some energy and let those guys do it. But I'm kind of in a fortunate, unique position where being the kicker, I get to kind of sit back and observe. And so I think that's a role that I can be pretty useful at, whether it's coming directly from me or not. I just, at the end of the day, my job is to help this team win, whether that's kicking footballs or encouraging guys. And you know, whatever we need, I'm certainly going to try and be that guy.
Or passing out books to the guys. For instance, last month you gave your teammates copies of Mindful Athletes, Secrets to Pure Performance by George Mumford. What did you get out of that book?
The biggest thing for me was just how to stay present in the current moment. You know, I would have these thoughts my first 2 years when I was with San Diego, trotting out there, just this kind of real negative self-talk. And I was screwed before I even went out there to make the kick. You know, the kick was already missed. And so this book has helped me focus on mindfulness, awareness of breath, you know, talking about, okay, instead of thinking about something, hypothetical, okay, you're going to miss this kick, you're not feeling great, okay, let me feel my lungs filling with air, let me feel my cleats in the ground, let me feel my helmet's a little bit tighter on the right-hand side. So you're staying in that exact present moment, so you're not allowed to focus or give your mind to anything else, and then, you know, same thing. If I'm still having those thoughts of doubt, I just focus on my technique. I don't let those thoughts come in anymore. It's, okay, what do I need to do to make this kick? I need to stay tall. I need to have a good, slow, smooth approach. I need to keep my eyes back. I need to swing through, finish down my target line. And if I do all of those things, the ball's going to go where it needs to go.
Josh Lambeau joining us. This is my favorite conversation about kicking ever, I think. You mentioned, I love it. It's so interesting. You mentioned the Chargers a couple of times. There's a story from back in the day when you were with the Chargers, Kobe Bryant came to camp. And I'm always fascinated, Josh, by the way other top athletes respond to Kobe. What do you remember about that visit, and what kind of things did you and he talk about?
Yeah, that was amazing, having Kobe Bryant come and talk to the team. I asked him the question, something along the lines of, I said, hey, Kobe, like, if you're, you know, have you ever had those kind of games where you're feeling like everything's right, you feel like your release is where it needs to be, you know, your mind is in a good spot, but the ball's just not falling, you know, how do you kind of adapt to that? And his response was, man, I just keep shooting.
Right.
Which I thought was awesome. He shared a story. I think he said he was 0 for 21 in one particular game. He said, but I made one three-point shot. And you know what three-point shot that was? The game winner. He's like, just because things aren't going your way doesn't mean you need to reinvent the wheel. Keep on doing what you know to do and do it. And it's gonna work. Sometimes you're in a rut. Sometimes things happen. That's sports. That's athletics. But do what you know to do. I think a lot of kickers get in trouble when they have one miss. They try and reinvent the wheel. And they say, oh, man, maybe I need to do something different with my plant foot or different with my follow through. It's like, no, man, you just missed. Like, Tom Brady misses throws. You know, Mel Gordon's going to miss a hole to run through. Like, the best of the best are going to miss. You got to be able to have that short-term memory and move on.
Jacksonville Jaguar kicker Josh Lambeau joining me for a few more moments. You have to. Now, there's been a lot of talk, of course, about Jalen Ramsey and his future. As a teammate, how do you approach that in terms of caring for your teammate, but at the same time knowing it is a business?
You know, again, that's one of the benefits of being a kicker. You kind of get to stay away from all that stuff. But, you know, I've gotten to know Jalen over the past couple of years. You know, I'm a fan of the guy on and off the field. You know, in terms of the football sides of things, I mean, I get it from from both standpoints. I understand that there's a cap and there are certain restrictions, but I also understand that, you know, guys want to get paid while they can, because it is, it's a brutal business, man. I mean, I'm a kicker and I'm hurting every week. You know, I can't imagine what these guys are going through. But, you know, I'm just trying to support him as a person, not, you know, not lean one way or another, and just encourage him and build him up, you know, whatever that might mean to him. You know, if I feel like there's something that should be said to encourage him, then I'm going to go do it. I'm not going to stay away from him. I'm not going to shun him. I'm not going to do anything. For now, he's my teammate, and so I'm going to go about it as such.
All right, I got about 90 seconds. I have to ask you this. Now, you know how tough it is to carve out a career in the NFL as a kicker, but in the offseason, you signed an extension with Jacksonville. What did it mean to you to establish yourself to the point where you signed that extension surrounded by your wife, Megan, your two dogs, and you used a pen that your dad gave you more than a decade ago? What was that moment like?
It was really surreal, to be honest with you. You know, this whole football thing was honestly, it started off as a joke from my mom. I'd moved out of my house at 14 to pursue soccer with the U-17 national team. You know, by the time my FC Dallas career was over, I was 21, and I told my mom, I said, hey, I think I need to go back to college. She said, well, if you're going to go back to college, why don't you learn how to kick field goals and come kick for the Badgers and live with your mother up here in Madison? And, yeah, thank God my mom loved me enough to miss me, because that's the only reason that I'm here right now. And so just kind of seeing all that hard work, the blind decision of completely changing careers. You know, one of my brothers told me it was stupid and I shouldn't do it. I should stay with football with soccer. And, you know, so getting that extension with, you know, my wife and my dogs, like you said, that pen that has only been used for contracts my dad gave me, it was just kind of a massive affirmation that I'm on the right path and I'm doing the right things.
That's awesome. 4 field goals, including the game winner in Sunday's win over Denver. The AFC Special Teams Player of the Week, Jacksonville at Carolina Sunday, 1 p.m. Eastern, Josh Lambeau with the jungle debut. Josh, great job. Really nice to talk to you, and I enjoyed that conversation. Thanks so much.
Yeah, me too. Thanks so much. Hope I get to get on again soon.
Frank in Brooklyn, because he's in market and he is on topic. What's going on, Frank?
Romy, it is such a pleasure, my man. On brand, in market. You've trashed the Mets soundly over the last year, and you're usually right about it. But, you know, man, this guy was responsible for at least 5 losses, dude. I'm telling you. What manager has an out count? He had an out limit for D. Come on. I mean, that's not the way we run the game, dude. I'm telling you, I don't know if they would have won in Washington the other night, but you give me DeGrom with this cumulative 2 ERA over the last year, 2 years, and I would have taken that game on Tuesday night against the Nats. One more thing, Rome. I'm going to bum rush in November to go see you into the Radio Hall of Fame, and the fact that it took this long to get you in there pretty much invalidates the entire institution. But that being said, I couldn't be more thrilled. And just a real quick note, I don't know if you know this dude or not, but SiriusXM Radio, Scott Wetzel, overnight guy, got canned last night. Great radio host. He's one of my favorites, along with you and everybody else. It's such a hard business, dude. For you to do what you've done, with no like morning zoo atmosphere, just one guy in there in the you know, pimp of the box. It's astounding for close to 30 years or 25 years, whatever it is. It's a brutal business, man. And you're the GOAT, bro. So that's it. That's my take.
I appreciate you, Frank. Thanks so much, man. Thank you for saying that. I really appreciate you saying that. That's nice. Thank you. Sincerely.
Good night now.